Hi, everyone, and welcome to the New York Now podcast, the non-program edition. That will be coming up tomorrow. On the show this week, our feature story focuses on the eventual closing of the nuclear power plant in northern Westchester County, Indian Point. On this podcast, we're talking to Blair Horner of the New York Public Interest Research Group about the bailout given last year to the three upstate nuclear power plants. Blair talks to us about their report, which came out this week, criticizing the deal. And we also go down memory lane. Where was Blair Horner when he heard the news 9 years ago? Not sure what we're talking about? Hang tight. We spoke to Blair in the balcony of the New York State Assembly. Blair, NYPIRG came out this week with an analysis on the impact of what has been generally described as an almost $8 billion bailout for the nuclear power plants in upstate New York. What did you find?
Well, just as a backdrop on this, we think it's the government's job to educate the public on whatever deals they're making. And in this particular case, the Cuomo administration pushed through in the dead of summer a significant increase in electric utility rates across the state to pay for, subsidize, to keep open aging upstate nuclear power plants. And they won't even say how much it's going to cost. They only really talk about the first 2 years, and yet it's a 12-year deal. Mm-hmm. And so we've worked with an independent group, the Public Utilities Law Project, to do two sets of analyses, one in the fall, one that we put out last week. The one in the fall estimated what the cost would be, and $7.6 billion is the reasonable estimate on the cost to New York State ratepayers across the board. The analysis that we worked with the Public Utilities Law Project on last week was to sort of look at that more deeply. So $7.6 billion, $2.3 plus billion of it will be paid directly by residential ratepayers. The remaining $5 billion will be picked up by commercial entities, industrial entities, municipalities, healthcare, school districts. All of those electric bills for all of those industries and entities will go up. And so what we were releasing recently was that sort of slicing and dicing so that New Yorkers know that one of the reasons why their electric utility bills are going up is because of this agreement. And the way that it's being structured is $7.6 billion. The lion's share of that is going to one corporation based in Illinois who owns the plants. And so it's been described as the single biggest transfer of wealth in New York State history from the public to one corporation for three power plants. We think that that issue needs to be thoroughly publicly aired, and it hasn't been.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe last winter, Entergy owns Fitzpatrick, right?
Which they sold it, though.
They sold it, okay.
Right, they did have it last year.
No, they were saying in the early part of that year is that it wasn't economically viable to continue. And the state stepped in not long after that, correct?
Yeah, the plants were built in the 1960s, and so they were reaching the end. They had already passed, actually, their sort of expected lifespan as facilities. Any machinery wears out, and they were economically unviable. And so Fitzpatrick was the one that got the most ink.
Yep.
They said they were going to have to close them down. They weren't efficient enough. They weren't profitable enough. They're going to close them down. Last year, around this time in the debate for the budget, the state Senate advanced a $100 million bailout for those companies to try to keep those plants open. And in the spring of 2016, there were discussions of a bailout anywhere from $59 to about $660 million. And last July, right after the session was over, right after 4th of July, the whole program got rewritten, the price went up. A few weeks later, it got banged through, and we estimate that cost to be $7.6 billion.
We should say the administration has said that these subsidies will help meet the state's goal of achieving half of our energy from renewable sources by 2030. Rich Ezzopardi, a spokesman for the governor, has said in the past that keeping the plants open was essential in meeting the state's greenhouse emission and renewable energy standards. He told Glenn Blaine of the Daily News this week that your study was misguided and cherry-picked propaganda that fails to take into account the skyrocketing energy bills and increased reliance on dirty burning fuels. What do you say to that?
Well, this is a taxpayer-funded public official, and the administration spent more money bemoaning our study than they have educating the public on what it is that they're planning to do. And this is the plan that the Cuomo administration put together. We think the public has every right to know every detail about it. If it's any of what he just said is true, then that information should be made available to the public. The contracts that have been reduced are heavily redacted. There have been no meaningful public hearings that have occurred since the deal was cobbled together in July. It's a huge amount of money. It's the public's money. And instead of going around trying to insult groups that are trying to fill the information gap with an organ, again, we worked with an outside organization that has no skin in the game, the Public Utilities Law Project. They did the analysis. We think that's misguided. In fact, the guide that we would offer to them would be hold public hearings, have town hall meetings. If the governor believes this is such a good deal, go to Long Island and tell Long Islanders, New York City, that it's worth their hundreds of millions of dollars in ratepayer dollars to keep these plants open. We don't believe that's the case. We worked with an expert out of Stanford University, Mark Jacobson, who did an analysis that said that you could achieve the same power if you focus resources on renewables. You could generate the same amount of power, less CO2 emissions, and at a lower price. And we submitted that comment to the PSC, that analysis done by Professor Jacobson, and we got no response. So it seems to me like they cut a deal in secret, and they're trying to wall off any criticism of it instead of just dealing with it and letting the public know what they're up to.
Let's go back to the hearing that you testified at. Oswego's Mayor William Barlow said in his testimony that the power plants are the backbone of the community, as you can imagine. The Fitzpatrick plant alone employs over 600 people, a figure that undoubtedly must have had some impact in keeping the plants open. One undeniable factor here, is geography, I guess. You know, the thought of losing 600-plus jobs in upstate is more damaging than, say, losing what eventually be, 1,100, 1,200 jobs down at Indian Point, downstate. Did you get any pushback from some of the Central New York legislators?
I'm
sure you did.
Of course, we're very sympathetic to communities that are basically one-industry communities, and what do you do when those industries close down? I mean, the only, I guess, observation we would make on this is these plants were built in the 1960s. People knew that they would wear out eventually. We've known for years that they were planning that they weren't efficient anymore. So instead of spending that time putting together plans for a reasonable transition for the communities to help buttress any economic loss and train new workers, because it takes a while to decommission a nuclear power plant, instead, nothing happens until the last minute. And what happens at the last minute is $7.6 billion of ratepayer money is dumped into keeping them alive. There are other nuke plants across the country that have closed and have been decommissioned. There are reasonable ways to do it. There's blueprints on how. And we think that if the PSC looked at it, if the Cuomo administration looked at it, well, let's see the plans. We haven't seen anything other than insults.
These subsidies are good for, 12 years?
That's right.
I guess leads us to the question, then what? You said it. I mean, these nuclear power plants were built 60 years ago. These aren't going on forever. Are we just delaying the next answer here for another 12 years, kicking the can down the road, as we like to say?
There's definitely a kicking the can element to all this. I mean, you never know what's going to happen in the future. It may turn out that these plants just don't work right anymore, and they have to be closed even earlier, right? So government... is not always good at taking the long view on problems that are down the road. And if you can avoid them, that makes more sense. In this case, there are real people that are involved in these communities. They are, I think, as the local officials correctly pointed out, because they tend to be well-paid employees in these areas, in many ways, it's sort of the economic engine of the place. But they are polluting. They don't maybe give off a lot of greenhouse gases, but they do pollute. And the waste that they generate will be stored on site for basically forever.
Yeah.
And those issues haven't been addressed. There were no additional safety requirements built into the agreement that the governor had with this plant, unlike what he did at Indian Point, where there are additional safety provisions built in. So, again, I think you the way to tackle this is to come up with a new plan that has a reasonable public process, that leads toward a smart phase out and a way to deal with the workers and communities that are directly affected, and at the same time save ratepayers money.
I have acted in a way that violates my obligations to my family and that violates my or any sense of right and wrong.
All right, let's wind down with some off-topic questions here. I'm not sure if you know this or not, but this Friday, March 10th, marks the 9-year anniversary of a major scandal here at the Capitol. It was the day the New York Times broke the story of Governor Eliot Spitzer being caught on a federal wiretap arranging to meet with a high-priced prostitute. Where were you when that broke, and what do you remember from that time period?
I was working at the Attorney General's office under Andrew Cuomo.
That's right.
My office was in the Capitol on the second floor. There was a complete shock and disbelief that this was happening. As I walked down the hallway of the second floor, which is the Attorney General's office, mm-hmm. has about a quarter of the second floor, the governor's office, mm-hmm. it was eerily silent. I think everyone was so shocked that people weren't even moving. It was almost as if you were walking around the building at 2 o'clock in the morning. It was really, really eerily quiet as everyone sat there in stunned disbelief. This is one of those stories in, you know, being New York history books. No one will, almost, it's almost like impossible to believe it happened. And yet it did. And so we were at the time, again, we were sort of huddled around our computers reading the New York Times story that broke that morning. And we had gotten some sort of heads up that something was happening that morning, and so it was, we were all in shock.
And the story kind of lasted for a day or two more than you might think, because he didn't resign immediately. I think what happened on a Monday, he didn't resign technically until I think Thursday or Friday. So this dragged out a few days, making it all the more unusual.
Well, I mean, other than Spitzer, no one else, and I guess the prostitutes that were involved and the people in intermediaries, I mean, no one else knew what was happening, right? So how do you even think that kind of thing through? In politics, you try to game out what's going to happen depending on how you act, and there's usually a handful of scenarios that are there. This is not something that anybody had contemplated, and it was such a shock. I imagine that his closest advisors couldn't even, like, start to think clearly, much less him, that he'd been caught.
Last set of questions here. How long have you been what we like to say a goo-goo, a good government advocate? How long?
Well, I started with NYPIRG in 1979. I've been working here in my own capacity starting in 1984. I had a little over a year working at the Attorney General's office and then 2.5 years at the American Cancer Society in mm-hmm. that sort of 30-some-odd years of being here. Seen a lot of changes. Seen a lot of things not change. Some of the names on the board
That's right.
are still the same legislators that were here when I started.
Let me ask you this, and you've probably heard this before, directly or indirectly. Do you ever get sick of advocating for the same thing over and over when you know it's probably going to fail for sure, or if it does pass an issue that you're big on, that it might be watered down?
Well,
ever get sick of that?
One of the beauties of working for NYPIRG is the agenda is broad. So for years we worked on banning smoking in public places, and that's real. And it's been, you know, I never thought I would see a ban on smoking in bars in my lifetime. And as a result, tens of thousands of people live longer and live healthier as a result of that. And so there's a state Superfund program. So there are enough victories to make it exciting, and it's always it's good to be involved in these fights where there's no financial stake for NYPIRG. It's just sort of what we think is the best thing. Now, when it comes to fixing the place and making it operate better or operate more in the open, that's certainly frustrating. And yet the system won't change unless people demand that it changes. And so I don't know what will happen in terms of cleaning up our campaign finance system, or having meaningful ethics enforcement of the law or an open government where decisions like a $7.6 billion bailout don't get done behind closed doors. I don't know when that will all happen, but it won't happen if people don't demand it. So the victories are not always, they never create the end game, but there is enough of them that it's sort of fun.
Well put. All right, Blair, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
If you don't already, please subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Matt Ryan. We'll see you this weekend on your local PBS station. And until then,
Excelsior!